Something's going on next weekend. We'll find out what it is on Scribble.
Welcome to Scribble, 30 minutes of conversation, comments, and reviews on reading and writing, editing, publishing, and selling books. I'm Roald Tweet.
Novelist Ben Wolfe has some work to do next weekend. We'll find out about it today on Scribble. So, what are you going to be doing, writing real fast?
Oh, I always like to write fast if I have the opportunity. No, what I'll be doing next weekend, first of all, thanks for having me. What I'll be doing next weekend is making an appearance at the Quad Cities Comic Con. It's going to be at the Rock Island Convention Center from 10 until 5, both Saturday and Sunday of next weekend.
And why are you there?
I'm there to set up and hopefully sell some of the books I've written.
Well, that's a good thing.
That's a pretty good reason.
But yeah. Yours aren't comic books, are they?
No, they're not comic books. They are science fiction, fantasy, and horror books. And then I also have a children's book, too. So I figure it's close enough to what that target audience would be interested in.
How do you arrange something like that? Do you negotiate with the convention people?
It kind of depends on the size of the convention. If it's a smaller convention or if it's a more regional, local type event, usually all you have to do is go to their website and book yourself a vendor or an artist spot, and then they give you a table. If it's a more in-depth event or if you have some more notoriety than I have, I guess we could say, then you have some more negotiating power and you might be able to negotiate a spot instead.
But, I mean, what brings you there? You're a novelist, and that's an interesting combination, science fiction. Do you say science fiction? Or?
Yeah, science fiction.
Horror.
Horror.
And children's books.
Children's and some fantasy as well, yeah.
And you told me before the program you were also working on a Western.
Yeah, I wrote that Western, man, a few years ago, and I think it's just time to put it out there. So I'm trying to resurrect it from the annals of history, so to speak.
Yeah, boy, the Western has fallen on hard times.
Yes.
You know, but back in the 60s when I started teaching here, you know, five of the top 10 programs were Westerns on television.
Mm. Yeah, my grandfather used to sit in his room in his old age and read dime Westerns, one after the other. And I don't think I've seen any of those. Are they still around?
There is a pretty robust community of both authors and their readers on Amazon who still love reading Westerns. And so my hope is to try to hit some of that readership by publishing this. As far as dime Westerns go, I know that big publishers still publish a lot of Westerns, but I agree with both of you. It's not like it used to be.
Yeah. Well, speaking not like it used to be, you weren't always a writer, were you?
No.
How'd you get started?
No, back when I was in seventh grade, I saw the movie Congo. And if you've seen it, you know that I'm sure it was a good book. I never did end up reading the book, but it's a Michael Crichton book, and Michael Crichton, of course, is fantastic. But the movie really misfired in probably every way that a movie could possibly misfire. And I thought it was so bad that I decided to write a parody of it, a spoof. And I called it Congo Roo, and I made it about killer kangaroos in Australia instead of killer gorillas in Africa. And keep in mind, I was in seventh grade, right?
Right.
So I thought this was the pinnacle of artistic creativity. So I wrote it, and I ended up writing two sequels to it, and it was just something fun, something I enjoyed. Gradually over time, as I approached my senior year in high school, I had the opportunity to do what was called an independent study in writing a novel. And so I did that for two semesters for one period of my senior year, the whole year. And it was a good experience. I didn't finish that book throughout that course of the year, but I did eventually finish it. And that one is buried in a drawer somewhere because it's not any good. That one and Conga Roo are hanging out in history where they belong.
So what was your actual first publication?
My actual first publication was a short story in a now defunct magazine called Harpstring Magazine. I believe the title of the story was called A Polar Encounter. And the concept was that a young couple are on sort of safari, but it's up in Alaska, and they get visited by a polar bear. So they have to deal with that. My first full-length novel that I published was a book called Blood for Blood, which I have since unpublished because it's not that it was bad, but I can definitely make it better. So I'm in the process of revamping it, which if you've read the book, you know is a pun because it's about vampires.
Yeah, well, yeah. Vampires have been big. I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
Let's see, what's in fashion now? Is it zombies? Zombies are really hot right now.
Somebody that talked to us about writing said, but if you start a zombie book now, by the time it gets published, it'll be out of date, so you got to think of something else.
Right? It kind of depends. Certain creature types like that have become sort of evergreen.
Right.
The trick is, can you bring something new
right.
to the vampire genre, to the werewolf genre, to the zombie genre? It just kind of depends. If you've got a unique perspective on it, then you can do very well.
How about a vampire with blunt fangs?
That's not a bad idea. He wouldn't be very effective,
right.
though, would he?
No,
well,
that's, you know, the run of the litter or something, and right. here he's born with blunt fangs. And he's, yeah, there you go. See what you can make of that.
All right.
So how did you get that novel published, Ben? You I saw you a few weeks ago on Channel 4 mm-hmm. talking about self-publishing. Was that self-published?
Yeah, that was a self-published book. I published that one back in, 2014. And the landscape since then has shifted pretty dramatically. It was a little bit harder back then to self-publish anything. Now it's much, much easier. You can basically buy a book cover from an artist who knows what they're doing, write a book, have it edited, and then put it up on Amazon. Back then, the formatting was really the difficult part. Getting it into a format that Amazon would take and that they would appreciate and be able to sell for you, that was harder. But I did eventually figure it out. I did get the book put out there. And so, yes, that was a self-published book.
So self-publishing is so common. These, you know, when
yes.
I was growing up, it was a vanity press. And
mm-hmm.
you ended up out $7,000 in a garage full of books,
yep.
hundreds of books.
Yep.
But that's no longer the case, right? I think people like Joyce Carol Oates now self-publish rather than let a publisher dictate what the cover is going to look like and things.
Yeah, self-publishing is definitely more prevalent. My wife, Carice Crow, and I are both self-published authors. We're actually going to a conference in November called 20 Books to 50K. Which the idea there is if you've written 20 books, then theoretically you should be able to make $50,000 a year, hence 20 books, 250K. They are a big indie publishing conference that happens every year. And they just had their registration open on the 29th, and they sold out in 17 hours.
Wow.
So they have 1,500 people coming, not including industry vendors or the faculty or the folks who are running the conference.
So how do you decide which company to go with? There are so many now that will self-publish your book.
Yes, and that's a great question. I'm glad you asked that because you had mentioned that vanity presses, they're less prevalent than they were, but they certainly still exist. There are people out there who are still willing to take your $7,000, publish your book for you, and then you end up with a garage full of books.
Right.
If you have a means to sell that garage full of books, then maybe it makes sense. But the reality is that anyone with any computer know-how or anyone who's willing to learn the computer know-how can become their own self-publisher these days. That's essentially
right.
what Carice and I have done.
Yeah, but you mentioned the bad thing. You have to learn how to do it.
Yes. Oh, yeah, it is a challenge for sure. There's a steep learning curve for certain parts of it, and then other parts of it are actually pretty easy. the for me at least, the online marketing portion of when you're trying to sell a book, that is a lot more challenging.
Yeah, how in the world do you do that? That would seem to me to be the problem, right? You know, Little Brown can take out huge ads in the New York Review of Books, but you can't, or you can't afford it.
That is very true. I can't, and I don't think I would want to. Most of the books that I sell, aside from doing live events, are sold exclusively through Amazon. And so there are what's called AMS ads, Amazon Marketing Services ads, that you can create through Amazon, and then Amazon will display them based on the keywords that you've selected and paid for, essentially. So you can try to buy ad space on Amazon's own website to promote your books to readers who are already on Amazon's site looking for their next great read. And then the other side of that would be Facebook also can be a good marketplace for marketing your books too. And Facebook has their own ads platform, and I know even less about that one. But there's great books out there, and I'd be happy to recommend a few if anyone has questions.
You know, it's one thing to write a book, but quite another to market it. That takes a lot of time and energy, doesn't it?
Yes. And that's, to tell you the truth, that's why I haven't invested as much time in the marketing side of things, because I'm not good at it. I'm even a little bit afraid of it. I'm afraid of doing it wrong. But the one thing that I know that I can do is write the next book. Because no matter what marketing you do, no matter how many ads you place, nothing sells the first book like the next book, especially if you're writing a series.
Right. And how you've done a series?
I have, yes.
And with how many books in it?
Right now, my fantasy series, the Blood Mercenaries series, has 4 books in it. I've got one prequel book, which is actually the longest of the series. I call that one Book Zero. I'm doing air quotes here, but you can't see this because this is radio. I've got the introductory book, the Origins book, Book Zero, and then I've got Book 1, 2, and 3. And my plan for that series is to make it a 10-book series, but we'll have to see how that goes.
How long does it take you to write a book? I mean, this is just amazing.
Sure. It really depends on a few factors. So if it's the first book in a series, it does take me a little bit longer because I have to create the characters from scratch, the story world from scratch, how everything works. I have to figure all of that out. So for example, the first book, the Origins book for Blood Mercenaries, took me about a year to get everything set up and to actually go through and write that book. However, the first book in the series, so after the Origins book, Book 1, The Crimson Flame, I wrote that in 34 days. And I was able to do that because I had done all of the pre-work before that to set up the world, to write the Origins book. And so it went really fast. That and my wife was very kind and let me stay up super late and work on it and avoid her and avoid normal life in the process.
34 days, that's almost exactly the number of days it took Dostoevsky to write Crime and Punishment. Believe it or not, to pay off a gambling debt.
Really?
Yes.
I felt like I had to pay off a gambling debt.
So have you ever, my son has done a little self-publishing, but he's had super success with Kickstarter.
Oh, yeah.
And GoFundMe. Do you use those?
I've used Kickstarter once, and I did it to fund my children's book, actually.
Oh, okay. That's what he did, too.
Yeah, yeah. The actual creation of the book, that was something that I was able to afford. The cost of the artwork, the layout of the text, those types of things, that cost me about $1,000. So I just did that up front. So the book was done before I ever ran the Kickstarter. And then when I ran the Kickstarter campaign, I the way I pitched it to the audience was, I'm doing this so I can afford to print copies of this book. And as a result of that, my goal was to raise $3,000. I raised about $3,300, and the total printing cost was a little bit higher than $4,000, and I was able to buy 1,000 books. So they're not in my garage, but they are in my office, in our basement. Yeah.
But how about local bookstores? Do you get your books in them?
I haven't pursued that very much. Local bookstores is a different animal. than a big chain bookstore, of course. If you want to get your books in a local bookstore, in theory, it's pretty easy. You go in, you talk to the owner or the manager and ask them what their process is. If you want to get your books into Barnes & Noble, usually you have to go through a big distributor, and that can be prohibitive. It can be cost prohibitive, time prohibitive. There's a lot of inner workings there where you essentially need to have a lot of money to be able to cover the cost of getting your books in there, and more importantly, the cost of getting your books back out of there if they don't all sell.
Yeah. You know, this is all good practical information for people who are writing, but how about your own books? You've mentioned that you have 4 books in this one series, and you have a horror series.
Yes, so I've got the 4 books in the fantasy series, the Blood Mercenaries series. I have a science fiction horror novel called The Ghost Mine, which was my first real solid attempt at self-publishing. I know I had mentioned Blood for Blood. That was very, very experimental. But this new sort of system that I've learned from 20 Books to 50K, which, by the way, is a Facebook group. You can go look it up, and if you want to join and learn more about self-publishing, that's a good resource. But what I've learned from them, I tried to apply as much of that as I could to The Ghost Mine, my sci-fi horror book. So that was my first real earnest foray into self-publishing. And then outside of that, I have a book of sci-fi and fantasy short stories that I published last month. I have the Western that I'm working on. It's not out yet. I have my children's book, which is called I'd Punch a Lion in His Eye for You. It's the story of a dad who would do anything to show his son how much he loves him. And then I think that's it right now. I've got a whole bunch of projects in the works,
so.
Though. Yeah.
I mean, you're not as old as we are, and I think either one of us would account that as a career's worth.
I would think so. Yeah. Have you ever tried to work through an agent?
Yes, I've actually had 2 agents.
How did you get them? One of the things that many of our listeners want to know is, how in the world do I get an agent?
How do you get an agent? The best way to get an agent is to go to a writing conference where the agent you want to hopefully sign with is going to be.
Okay.
So obviously you have to do a lot of research on the front end to make sure that the agents who you want to talk to actually represent the type of books that you write or want to write. So for me, writing sci-fi and fantasy, I don't want to go approach an agent who, even if she is really a great agent, if she only works with romance, that's not going to help me, and it's not going to help her. She's going to turn me down. So if you are writing sci-fi and fantasy, go to a sci-fi and fantasy writing conference. Try to meet some agents there. Likewise, romance, if you write romance, go to a romance conference. The RWA is a good organization for that, despite some of their recent troubles that they've had. They usually do a pretty good job of bringing in agents and publishers to their conferences who will actually be interested in publishing the type of stories that you want to write if you write romance. So really it comes down to doing your research and trying to meet them in person if you can. If you can make that personal connection, then you're going to be someone that they have an actual frame of reference for, as opposed to sending a query to them via email blindly.
You know, it sounds to me from what you said, if you want to be a writer, you better have a reliable source of income to pay your way to travel all to these conferences and so on. It's expensive to be a writer, isn't it?
It is. There was an article in The Atlantic that just came out about how expensive it is to be a writer, and she was dead on. The one point that we disagreed on was, she lives in New York City, and obviously if you're here in the Quad Cities, the cost of living is a lot lower. So it's more reasonable. The flip side, of course, is that you're not in New York. You're not as able to possibly meet with publishers, big New York house publishers, face-to-face. But here in the Quad Cities, if you want to self-publish, just get to work, start writing books, start publishing books.
Yeah, but you mentioned these conferences you go to to meet agents and so on. That's got to take up a lot of time.
It can, yes. There was one year where I went to 10 writers' conferences throughout the course of the year. I was much younger back then, and they were they were flying me out because I was actually teaching at these conferences. I've taught at over 40 writers' conferences nationwide. So that really helps with the cost. If you can get good enough at something that you can then go and teach it at a writers' conference, there's a chance at least that they're going to be willing to bring you in as a speaker. So that's sort of a little hack on getting to conferences a little bit cheaper and a little bit more frequently.
So what kind of programs did you do at those conferences, for instance?
I taught on editing. I taught on character construction. I've given the keynote address at two different conferences. One was an editing conference. One was a writing conference. Talked about a few self-publishing things. I used to run three flash fiction magazines where we published stories of 1,000 words or less. And so that was sort of my in for most of these conferences, because then I could be the flash fiction guy. Again, I'm doing air quotes on the radio. But as the flash fiction guy, that gave me some credibility in a field where there is almost no one else trying to be the main person for that.
What are you doing next weekend?
Next weekend, I'm going to MightyCon, which is the Quad Cities Comic Con. So we'll set up a table, we'll have our books out, and I'll just be trying to interact with readers, tell them about my books, and sell them the books. I'm not speaking on anything next week.
Oh, I just wondered if you were giving a course there. But I guess Comic Con is not the normal place to give a course on writing, is it?
It depends. We've done that at two comic conventions thus far, but for the most part, writers' conferences, which of course are different than comic conventions, writers' conferences are the place to do that.
Uh-huh. Well, I must say, Ben, I'm impressed with your dedication to your work. You certainly seem to have accomplished much in a fairly short period of time. If I were you, I'd go back and dig out that first book and see what you can make of it. Because obviously you have a facility at this.
Thank you.
And I wonder, how do you keep a series going? How do you keep, I'm thinking of Peter Robinson's series on Inspector Banks. I marvel at how he's able to go from one story to another with the same character.
Yeah.
You have to keep finding ways to do that, don't you?
Yes. It's very, very challenging. One of the things that really helps me, at least thus far, has helped me with the series that I'm working on, is to do a lot of outlining in advance. And in addition to outlining the entire series in advance, even if you can't get super specific toward the end, just having a general idea of what the overall story arc is going to be, that has really helped me. And then as I'm writing through the actual books, ideas will pop into my head. And then I quickly go and add them to the outline for later on. And so I'm sowing seeds to reap a harvest later on as I'm writing the rest of the books in the series.
Now, once again, the event next weekend is when and where?
It's the Quad Cities Comic Con. It is from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. both Saturday and Sunday, at the Rock Island Convention Center.
Okay, very good. Ben Wolf, thank you very much. You obviously have been very good at what you're doing, and we thank you for spending time with us.
Thank you. My pleasure.
I don't know, Roald. Ben makes me feel so lazy.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. Well, we get these people.
I've never been able to sit down and write as if it were a regular job, 4 hours then take off for lunch. I mean, not even 3 hours in a row. I can't do it.
The only times I've done that is when I've been obliged to, when I've been adapting a Greek comedy and I have to have it in 3 days.
Right, yeah.
Then I will stay at the computer. But it's not easy.
I once had an internship. Augustana got an internship to send faculty out into real jobs. And I got a job at a place that wrote manuals for the Army. in town out in East Moline for a summer. And I wondered how, and there were, in the room there were about 20 writers who were writing different sections of manuals. And I wondered how people, you know, spent 8 hours a day at a regular job just writing. And what would happen there is there would be complete silence for about 20 minutes, and everybody was busy writing, and then somebody would sigh or something and tell a joke. And everybody would laugh and relax for about 2 or 3 minutes. And then everybody was back to work again. All day long, you know, 20 minutes of work, back off and laugh. And people did it, and I did it too.
Okay, well.
But it can be done, but not me.
You got to get to work. You got about 3 minutes for a book review.
Okay, this is a really interesting book. It's another immigrant novel, and I am fond of immigrant novels. Giants in the Earth by Rolvag, Onto a Good Land by Moberg, A Tree Grows in Brooklyn, and so forth and so on. But this is different because it's a Muslim family that that immigrated to the United States. It's not real. It's fiction. And it's called A Place for Us. It's by an author named Fatima Alirza, A-L-I-R-Z-A, Alirza. It covers several generations of a family who the parents of the main characters have immigrated to the United States, adopted in, gotten jobs, respectable jobs, and how do you then become part of regular society? It begins with the marriage of the older daughter to someone else. She's not getting married to somebody the parents picked, which is the American way, not the Muslim way.
That's a bad thing.
The son has been alienated from his parents for years, is in fact into drugs and into other things. It's hard to immigrate, right?
Yeah.
And it's hard particularly, I think, if you come from a culture so different from the Muslim culture. Norwegians and Swedes and Germans are roughly more or less the same. But this is an immigrant novel in which there's real struggle to adapt. And it has some success and some failures. But it is really an interesting story of what it means to be a really, really alien immigrant and have to adopt American ways.
It is just amazing that so many people have gone through that experience and settled into jobs and so on. But some things end badly. But generally, you have to admire the grit and determination of people who make that kind of move from one world to another.
Yeah, totally different, yeah.
What's the name of this book again?
A Place for Us.
A Place for Us?
Yeah, it was discussed. St. Paul Lutheran has a book discussion group that discussed it last year, and I thought that's a really interesting book, so I picked up a copy and looked at it.
Okay, and the author, try that again.
Fatima Alirza, A-L-I-R-Z-A.
Okay, very good. That's a book we recommend for you today, and we recommend that you join us again next week. I'm Don Wooten with Roll Tweet. We'll be back for another session then of Scribble.